Anita, good afternoon, Lagos. How are you? I was really, really, really enjoying Marianne's show before in the car. Actually, I sat in my car and I was listening to it, and it was really good, actually. And I had my own nawa, but I couldn't get through. I'm sure they do that on purpose. When I call in and I want to contribute my own nawa, somehow I don't get through. Welcome to Borderlines. We are streaming live. We are on Instagram and Threads, Nigeria Info FM Lagos. We are on Twitter, Nigeria Info FM. We are on Facebook and YouTube, where you should be watching me right now, Nigeria Info 99.3. You will be able to call in today, especially, and I'll tell you why soon. On 0700 993 993 993. The female only line is 0201 465 7190. WhatsApp is 0809 597 5805. So much has happened. Yes, Borderlines, the show that still continues to take you beyond borders to places where others don't take you to. There's a lot I'd like us to discuss today. Our first guest won't be joining us till around 4:45, 5 o'clock. So you know what that means, don't you? It means you and I have a chance to talk. Yes, to talk. And I will give you time to talk. I mean, it's not like you have to take up, you know, the whole 5-10 hours, you know. Don't monopolize the time so others can't talk. But I can promise you that in the event that the lines allow me to be able to allow you to talk more than the one, and you know, Miriam is very strict. If you don't stick to your 1 minute, you're off. But you know, and on Down for Conversations, I would normally give 2 minutes. Today I'm going to give you between 3 and 4 minutes, you know, because we've got a lot to discuss. Like I said, my guest today is not going to be joining us till later on, around 4:45, 5 o'clock. So, and I know that quite a lot of you now have a lot to say where you have been following, and, you know, you're pretty hot on this stuff, irrespective of what your opinion will be. So I'm going to start today's show. Listen very carefully. I'm going to start today's show by reading out an article. One of the articles that I would say is the most introspective article that I have read from an Israeli journalist. You know, we've had, his name escapes me now. We've had one of the foremost Israeli journalists on our show. He's joined us from, from Tel Aviv. He works for Haaretz. Well, this is another article, not by him, but by a gentleman named, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it properly, Chom Levinson. Okay, it was published in Haaretz on April the 11th. So, I'm going to read it. Here goes. We've lost. Truth must be told. The inability to admit it encapsulates everything you need to know about Israel's individual and mass psychology. There's a clear, sharp, predictable reality that we should begin to fathom, to process, to understand, and to draw conclusions from for the future. It's no fun to admit that we've lost, so we lie to ourselves. Some of us maliciously, others innocently. It would be better to find solace in some airy carb with a total victory crust, carb being carbohydrate. But it might just be a bagel. When the solace ends, the hole remains. There's no way around it. The good guys don't always win. He goes on to talk about his favorite book, but I'm not going to go there. I'm going to jump to the next paragraph. The point of talking about his favorite book was a sort of reference, if you like. But I'll go back. I'll continue further down. After half a year, We could have been in a totally different place, but we're being held hostage by the worst leadership in the country's history and a decent contender for the title of worst leadership anywhere ever. Every military undertaking is supposed to have a diplomatic exit. The military action should lead to a better diplomatic reality. Israel has no diplomatic exit. It has a scoundrel for a leader, someone with no capacity for leadership or decision making. A person who loses his sense of good judgment over a free cigar. Yet, the electorate puts its faith in the current prime minister to the tune of 32 Knesset seats. You know, Knesset, that's their parliament. Theoretically, we could have been in a better place. The shock of the outbreak of the war could have been a starting point for a swift, powerful, aggressive, eminently justified campaign to quickly root out Hamas wherever that was possible. It could have been replaced by a coalition of countries with money and good intentions to carry out reconstruction with global and Arab backing, along with Palestinian Authority, or along with the Palestinian Authority. We could have created a viable alternative to Hamas in Gaza. After six months, there already might have been the first signs of independent government there. Every day and every minute, better decisions could have been made. But that's whom we elected, issued with a person attached. We can't say it, but we've lost. People have an inclination to believe in the best and be optimistic, hoping that tomorrow will be okay. That we're in a process that in the end, will be more successful. That's the most fundamental failure of human thought. The notion that the direction we are taking is a good one. That we just need to get there already. That in just a little more time, with a little more effort, the hostages will be returned. That Hamas will surrender and Yahya Sinwar will be killed. After all, we're the good guys and good will triumph evil. It's the same mentality that leads to the notion that the Iranian regime will soon implode. That's a quote. And other notions that have more to do with Hollywood scripts than life itself. They're not the truth. It relates to something that's uncomfortable. After all, it's uncomfortable telling the public the truth. It's unpleasant to say we may not be able to safely return to Israel's northern borders. You know, that's the one that that borders Lebanon. My conclusion from October 7th as a journalist is that what's uncomfortable is the most dangerous thing for our security and our future here. That being addicted to feeling good is itself what's dangerous. We need to tell the truth, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it hurts, even if some people deplore it, even if it lowers morale. That's an article by an Israeli journalist called Chum Levinson. It was published in Haaretz, as you know. Well, you may not know, actually, I shouldn't say as you know. Haaretz is one of the most popular, well-read publications in Israel. So I want you to call me. Has Israel lost? Is Chum correct? The telephone number is 0700-993-993-993. The female-only line is 0201-465-7190. WhatsApp is 0809-597-5805. So we have, there's a lot going on in the US, as you know, right? This war has sparked off, protests across different universities in Gaza. Okay, I'll read out to you all the universities that I've actually already, but you've got Columbia, you've got Harvard, you've got Yale, you've got universities in Australia even, you've got Boston, Texas. There are so many. Students are protesting, but not only are they protesting, they are being inspired. For instance, Columbia was known, was one of those universities where students protested against the Vietnam War in the 60s, I think it was like 68. And they also protested against apartheid in South Africa. So now the students are saying, we're going to protest until you divest from anything to do with Israel. That is businesses and individuals that are to do with Israel. They've mentioned things like, you know, companies like Cisco, etc. So I'm coming to the calls because you're all already calling. We will also be talking. I also want you to comment on the mass graves. Remember, mass graves of around 400 people have been found in like three hospitals in Gaza after Israel's withdrawal. Some of these bodies were found tied to their back. It's against the Geneva Convention, even if you were to take somebody as a prisoner of war, to handcuff or tie their hands together and then kill them. It is against the Geneva Convention. It is the equivalent of an assassination. Some 400 bodies have been found. Some of them had the suture, you know, those things they put in your hands in hospital on them. So it shows that they were actually patients in the hospital. Israel will claim that they're all Hamas, that what they did was kill Hamas operatives. But even if they were Hamas operatives, if you've captured them and you've tied their hands, why then have they been shot or dead or buried in mass graves? There are families who are now discovering bodies of their loved ones that they've been looking for. The genocidal war, and I will call it that, you can call me and disagree with me if you want, that's fine. But the genocidal actions, war, incursions, if you like, of Israel in Gaza is actually not only dividing the world, not only is it isolating Israel, not only is it actually even isolating the US to an extent, it's becoming even more menacing. I'm coming to your calls now. This is Borderlines, the only show where you'll be able to discuss this to your heart's content. Hello.
Good evening, ma.
Good evening.
Comrade Professor Koboko.
Koboko, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm at the top with full force.
Okay, tell me. What are your thoughts?
The journalist you just read an article for us is talking his own. Let me tell you, in 1 Samuel chapter 22, God instructed Saul to say, kill and bury. Kill everybody. He go carry some women, carry some children, carry some us, carry some ewu, that is ewure, and come back. That is why this thing is escalating. Nobody will justify what happened on October 7th in Israel. Let me tell you, if this thing did not happen, Israelites could not have observed and know the tunnels Hamas were using. And former Hamas leader, Imam Hassan Al-Banna, said that he is going to obliterate and annihilate and extinguish Israel. That's what he said. So anything that Netanyahu is doing to go back to Hamas, I support him. Because you cannot stay there and somebody say he will annihilate you. Now, Jared, do you want to call propaganda? Israel are killing 30,000. Israel are killing 40,000. But they have forgotten what happened 7th October, where 20,000 Hamas entered through air, sea, and the border. It's unfortunate.
Okay. Koboko. Right. Some facts. I must correct you on some facts.
Okay.
20,000 Hamas operatives did not enter Israel. It was around 3,000, number one.
Okay.
Number two, 1,000, in fact, I think it's now been confirmed to be 1,800 and something, but let's just say 1,200 were killed by Hamas in Israel. Okay?
Accepted.
Right. Permit me to finish. Now, it is also accepted that over 30,000, whether you say 32, 35, 37, let's just keep it at over 30,000 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza. Now, my question to you then, Koboko, is, are you saying to me, because of whatever was said in the Bible in ancient times, Israel has the right to kill that many people? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. What I'm saying is that I've had all your correction. No matter all the protests, no matter any change of government, no matter any coalition, no matter any protest against Israel, I want him to kill all Hamas.
Oh, no. But hold on. Again, let's just start, right?
Okay.
You say you want him to kill, you want Israel to kill Hamas. Israel said, wait, I know, and I'm repeating what you said. You want Israel to kill. Yes, I know. Koboko, will you please listen? You want Israel to kill Hamas, correct? Right. Yes, hold on. Israel. Oh, Koboko, I'm going to disconnect this if you won't listen to me. Israel also said their war is against Hamas. Correct?
Yes.
However, so far, Israel, as the ambassador told us last week, will say they've been able to kill 15,000 Hamas operatives. Israel, will confirm to you that there's anything between 30,000 to 40,000 Hamas operatives, that is, members of the Qassam Brigade. Now, on the other side of that, the other accepted fact is over 30,000 innocent, mostly children and women, have been killed in Gaza since Israel said they want to kill Hamas. I'm going to leave you to close. Go on, quickly answer that. Respond to that. The lines are going.
In a war like this, there is consequences of war.
Okay.
What happened in Oklahoma? People that they were killing and the house they were burning. Now they kill Nigerian soldiers in Oklahoma. We are against them killing Nigerian soldiers, but the Nigerian soldiers are not burning the house, killing the children, killing everybody. So there is consequences of war. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Koboko. Okay. Oh. Thank you, Koboko. Right. I'm coming to the next line. Hello.
Hello, sister, again.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, man.
What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Jasfet. I'm calling from Nigeria.
Your name is?
Jasfet.
Ah, Jasfet. Hello.
Sister, again, let me ask you. Why did the Hamas attack Israelites? Why? They are the first to attack Israelites. Why did they?
Are you looking for an answer or is that a rhetorical question?
I'm just looking for an answer.
Okay.
Why did they attack Israelites?
No, Israel. Hold on. Let's get out of the habit of saying Israelites. They are Israelis and the country is Israel, right? Okay. So, okay. Now, let me help you if you want me to answer. I don't know whether you've watched my interview with Hamas. It's still on our website, on our YouTube channel, which is NigeriaInfo99.3. It's quite an extensive interview, so you must go back and watch it. But I'm going to try and cut it short for you, okay? Jasfet. Oh. See, you got to make sure you've got good network. Sorry. Jasfet, if you call back, I will attempt to answer it. Hello.
Hello, this is Yogi.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. This is Bola calling from Ojo.
Your name is Bola?
Yeah, calling from Ojo.
Okay, go ahead, Bola.
Yeah.
Did you hear the article that I read out?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And you've heard everything else.
Mention of you might be hit by some call. You know, there are some certain people that believe they are a descendant from that area. So don't be surprised. You might be hit with some unnecessary question and all that. I just want to appreciate you. You know, I've been clamoring for this for a long time. At least we should have some of a top African journalist who will be digging into international affairs. Who will be making researches, especially all these something that has to do with America. And I've not seen any top journalist in Africa that always come out with documentaries of, you know, some secret or and some international, you know, policies and international, you know, relation with other nations, all that. Just as other like American comes to Nigeria or in some African countries and make documentaries about, you know, African countries. I mean, I'm so happy to see you, you know, I mean, discussing international affairs like this. And
okay.
I would really implore you to do more. And
okay.
I want to see more of top, you know, journalists in Africa that would be making research about, you know,
okay.
all these European countries and, you know, Asia and all that. You know, I just love it.
Thank you very much. That's the concept of Borderlines. It was created specifically to talk about global issues. And we, as you know, we try to do so many other areas as well. There's a special episode that I'm working on, and I haven't even told the team yet, and I think it's going to blow your mind. But meantime, I'm coming to your calls. Hello. Oops. Okay. Right, you know what? I wonder if I should, at this moment, do we have the President Netanyahu's, Prime Minister Netanyahu's response to what he said, right, about the protest in America. Okay, I'd like you all to listen to this. I'm going to the calls are busy, so now we're going to have to cut your calls to 3 minutes, all right? Let's listen to this. How long is it? Less than a minute. I want you all to listen to this. Stay on the line. I'll be coming to you. This is what Prime Minister Netanyahu had to say to the protests going on in America.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. It's unconscionable. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned, and condemned unequivocally. We've seen in history that anti-Semitic attacks were always preceded by vilification and slander. Lies that were cast against the Jewish people that are unbelievable, yet people believed them. And what is important now is for all of us who are interested and cherish our values and our civilization, to stand up together and to say enough is enough. We have to stop anti-Semitism, because anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It always precedes larger conflagrations that engulf the entire world.
Okay. That was Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel. Let me give you a fact, to if you like, the opposite of what he's saying, right? The students that are protesting are Jews, Muslims, and secular students. That is a fact, okay? The students, they are Jews. They are Muslims. Some are Christians and some are secular. So how exactly can you be saying they are being anti-Semitic? That's number one. Number two is, during Passover, remember Michael had told us Passover was last week. During Passover, in some of those, so the students are protesting by setting up camps in the compound. You saw them having Passover meals. Literally, with non-Jews. So the Jews that were there, the Jewish students were there, they had the skull cap on, and they were sharing Passover meals with the Muslims and the Christians and the secular students. That's number one. Number two, which is another fact, is that there was a time when the Muslims needed to pray. The non-Muslims created a circle around them to pray. So you see, narratives that says they are being anti-Semitic has to be questioned. You can call. I'm coming back to your calls. You'll have to forgive me. You can call. I'll be coming to your calls. But if you're not calling yet, I have WhatsApp. Oh, you people like to get in front of WhatsApp message people. Hello? Hello?
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Your name and where you're calling from, please. Pardon?
We agree to the UN mentioning two-state nation in Gaza, in Gaza Strip. And then the Hamas went to kill Israelis in their domain.
Sorry, who agreed? Who is we? Sorry, sir. You didn't give me your name.
That is why they are killing. And you are
can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Israeli person that came last week mentioned it, that they are still holding their people. That is why they are digging to their home.
Can you hear me, sir?
Hamas, we know that they are terrorists. And they are Palestine has hired them, giving them power to rule over them as their means of defense. And why how come Iran are also coming to are they coming to defend Hamas and Palestine? And Palestine are also in support of Hamas.
Okay, can you hear me?
So there's no land.
Can you hear me?
In defense of Hamas and Palestine.
Okay.
All the UN can do is just to call them to round table.
Okay.
If they need to release the hostages, let them release the hostages. Okay. That is what I will say. Thank you.
Thank you. He clearly couldn't hear me. So I'm going to try and read your WhatsApp messages. What have I got here? Hello, Bella Irich. Cutting people off while they're making sense on a topic of discussion makes Marianne's... Oh, don't do that. Stop yourself, gosh. Good evening, Cecile Gay. I sometimes worry that many of your listeners do not listen to your speakers with an open mind. We are clearly a religious bunch, but like FFK reiterated in the previous discourse, it only takes one who is human to support a ceasefire. We are quick to blame Hamas for October 7th attack, but turn a blind eye to tensions before then. I support a ceasefire. And you forgot to put your name, but thank you very much for that. Where have I got here? Right. Good evening. Hamas is recognized as a terrorist organization. By whom? You see, there is a presumption that the whole world thinks Hamas is a terrorist organization. That is not true. It's only some parts of the world, not the whole world. Anyway, and they are not recognized. You mean they are prescribed by some parts of the world, not the whole world. So I've just got to correct you there. They killed and kidnapped civilians. They hide behind civilians in battle. Why don't pro-Palestinian supporters talk about that? Why? Why can't Palestinian people revolt against the terrorist organization Hamas so that these killings will stop? That's Tommy from Alakbere. Tommy, stay listening. I'm going to put that. You see, if I answer, it will be like I'm answering. I'm going to put that question to my guest. He'll be joining us soon. What else have I got here? Da-da-dum. Good evening, Miserity. Oh, how sweet. I am Joseph from Taraba State. I'm a regular listener to you. To your show, I have a question for you. Why did Hamas carry out an attack on October 7th? Why did the Palestinian people celebrate if they are not Hamas? Very good question, and we've answered it so many, many times. But stay listening. I'm going to come to the calls because the calls are going crazy now. But please, please, please stay listening, okay? Remember, we've still got at least over an hour and a half or so to go on the show. Hello? Okay. Oops, I'm coming to you now. Hello?
Yeah, good afternoon, Cecilia.
Good afternoon, sir. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, Rapuchiku is my name.
Hello, Rapuchiku.
Okay. So my take is in regards of the 7th October, the attack of Hamas to Israel that triggered the differences. Now I want to ask, when Hamas, for the innocent ones, I sympathize with what is happening both in Hamas and Israel, because it's human beings that are going. But in regard of 7th October, Hamas attack on Israel, I think they also targeted civilians. In civilians, the children, the women that are being attacked, not their army, not their defense. Yeah, now, they claim Israel is targeting civilians, women and children. But the one they did to Israel, is it not the same children? Is it not the same civilian they targeted, Hamas targeted? About 1,200 of them. Let them think solution to end these differences and not, making sentiment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you and God bless you.
God bless you, Rapachuku. Right, so I'm going to read to you, I think it's from Reuters, actually. Mass graves in Gaza. What do we know? Mass graves in Gaza. What do we know? It's by Anthony Deutsch and Stephanie Vandenberg. Okay, it was written just a couple of hours ago, actually, today. So, the discovery of mass graves at two Gaza hospitals, said by Palestinian authorities to contain hundreds of bodies, have triggered calls by the UN rights chief and others for an international investigation, including the US, by the way, including the EU, actually. While not defined under international law, a mass grave is a burial site containing multiple bodies, the existence of which could be important in detecting possible crimes. So what is known about the mass graves discovered in Gaza? The Palestinian Authority said a grave site discovered at the Nasser Hospital, the main medical facility in central Gaza, contained nearly 400 bodies. It was uncovered after Israeli troops pulled out of the city of Khan Yunis. Reuters reporters on Monday saw emergency workers digging corpses out of the ground in the ruins of Nasser Hospital. Reuters video, filmed in January, showed the digging of a mass grave and the burial of bodies by Palestinians who said they had to do that at the Nasser Hospital complex because of a lack of safe access to a proper burial site after various sites was too far away. Another grave site also found by Palestinian authorities at the Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza, which had been targeted by an Israeli special forces operation. Reuters has verified footage of the digging of graves near the hospital since November. It is illegal to disturb a mass grave. Gosh, the lines are going. I have so much to read. I'll keep reading as time goes on. I'm going to read your WhatsApp messages. What do you have here? What do we have here? I can't find. Cecil, I keep hearing you say IRA killed Louis Mountbatten, the first Earl of Mountbatten of Burma. And I wonder, what has that got to do with the Israeli cause? IRA is the Irish Republican Army, while Israel has the IDF. That's Genesis from Bariga. Good question, Genesis. You probably missed what I was saying at that time. The IRA was a resistance group. Hamas is a resistance group. The IRA was a resistance group for the Irish. They were fighting the British. Hamas is a resistance group for the Palestinians. They are fighting the Israelis. Okay? MK, I call them MK. It is called MK because I can't remember I can never pronounce the exact word. Where the resistance group for the ANC. Yes, They were fighting on behalf of the blacks of South Africa against their apartheid rulers. So you see now, the reference to Lord Mountbatten was about resistance groups. And the IRA did kill Lord Mountbatten when I think they bombed a hotel. And that's when he was killed. I can't remember. I think it might be the Brighton Hotel, if memory serves. Hope I've answered your questions, Genesis from Bariga. I'm coming to your calls. Hello.
Good evening, Sister
Obi. Good evening. What's your name? Where are you calling from, please?
Mrs. Ivoli calling from Ikorodu.
Okay, go ahead, Mrs. Ivoli.
I listened to the audio you played, and I listened to a lot of comments from people. But I want to say, there's this saying that all is fair in love and war. Let's call it spade a spade. Israel, I know they are fighting for one or two things, the other people as well, but the issue is this. There's this Yoruba proverb that says, Ashiju Baba Ashete. So at some point, one particular side will go overboard and the other one will want to retaliate. Now, having said this, when all appeal were made all the world over that they should sheath their swords, both warring factions refused to sheath their swords. They kept hammering, and now everything is just blowing up. See, enough of all this. If we keep bickering like this, people will come on the show, accuse you, do this, do that. I know we all have our various,
I don't mind them coming to accuse me. It's okay.
I agree. Some would even say you're on the other side.
It doesn't matter. It's okay. But I don't mind.
You understand. So what I'll just say is, whether we are here or there, all we want is peace. Whatever it will take. I don't want to digress a bit. Cecilia, every time you come on the show and I hear all these sordid and gory details, it's so painful. I don't know. So my question to you this afternoon is, what's therapeutic for you? How do you unwind when you hear all those things?
We're not going to talk about it. Well, I'm doing my job.
I agree.
Thank you.
Just tell me.
No, I can't take time up to talk about myself. Okay. It is my job. And yes, we all hope for peace. But thank you, Mrs. Oboli. Now, I want you all to call, because nobody has actually talked about the article that I read out. Nobody has made reference to the voice note that I read out. Perhaps I need to read out another one. My guest is going to be joining us. Can we please check if he's online? It's 4:45 now. So let's see if he's online, because I want us to expand this conversation. I know we all want peace, but come on. We've been doing this show for so long. This war has been going on for over 6 months. It's over 200 days now. What are we doing? Right? You must have an opinion. And whether you agree with me, you agree with something else, you agree with what I read out, you disagree with it. Like Koboko came and he spoke his mind and we had a discussion, you know, until the line went, until we finished, actually. His line didn't cut off. We concluded. But some of you, you see, when we're talking about these things, and if you do want me to talk about why I'm able to do this show, it is my job to try as best as possible, as best as it is humanly possible, to actually remove emotions from what I'm doing. When I finish this show, I might be emotive. When I get on the call to my friends, I might be emotive. Heck, I can be emotive on my social media. That's my space. Right now, I've got to present to you what's going on. All right? I'm coming to your calls. I can see they're trying to connect my guests. Hello?
Hello. Thank God. You see,
I'm so sorry.
Thank God you picked my call.
I'm so sorry. I don't know whose call I pick. I just pick any calls. Go ahead.
Okay. This is John calling you from the... I listened to the journalist. You read the...
Yes. Chom, the Israeli journalist from Haaretz. Yes.
Yes. He's right on point. Because... from that, on the 7th September, I think, I expected Benjamin Netanyahu to use that attack to establish a formal diplomatic relationship with Iran and other country. But instead, he went to war. Outright war. Killing innocent women and children. For me, some people don't understand where that journalist is coming from. He is an Israeli.
Yes.
And he's condemning an act that is so terrifying for the eyes to see or even the ears to hear. I wish there's something else to be done to bring about peace in that region.
John, let me just come to you. Can I? Would you mind if I talked with you? And this is what I find interesting. One of the things, and I'm glad you're the first person to actually refer to that article. One of the things that I found most interesting in that article was how it seemed like to tell the truth is controversial in Israel. Like, literally, it wasn't okay. And he was being brave to say it.
The man resides in Israel. It's not that he's writing it from another country. And that is how so many other citizens of Israel...
Oh, your line's breaking up. Hello?
Hello, can you...
Yes, go ahead. I'm letting you round up.
Other Israelites...
Israelis.
Oh, I mean Israelis. To be condemning this killing going on in Gaza and West Bank.
Thank you.
Terrifying. Please, let him stop.
Thank you.
I'm a military man. We're never trained to kill civilians. What you do, just speak out the leader in an IS operation. You don't speak out the leader. You have a marksman. You pick that man out. And before you know, everybody scatters and go back to their hiding places.
Okay.
Not to kill women and children, even attacking hospitals.
Yeah.
It is wrong.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Right. My guest is here, so you can all hold on for a bit. Okay? Stop calling for a bit. I'm going to be talking to him. I can see him.
For a bit.
Okay. I'm hearing bounce back. Right. My next guest is Mr. Najim Animashaw. He's a development professional and a policy analyst. He's also something of an expert, not just on today's conflict, but on the history, on, if you like, the ancient history. So I'm going to try and drag him as far back as possible so that you can all pick from his brain. But we are going to start with that article that I read out, which I know that he's been listening. Najim, can you hear me?
That I read out.
Oh, we're having bounce back from Najim's line. Najim, can you hear me? Technical people, please do something quickly, please. I can see him. Hello? Yeah, you need to unmute him. Ah, better. Hello, Najim, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent. Yes, I can hear you. Thank you so much for joining. It's an absolute pleasure to have you.
Yeah, it's lovely to be with you.
So, I don't know, I know you've been listening. That article that I read out from Aretz, and it basically is saying, look, we've lost. We've lost this war because we didn't execute it properly. We've got a terrible leader. Otherwise, had we taken the right steps from October 7th, we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in now. We would have had international coalition. We could have installed the Palestinian Authority. Hamas would not have any foothold in Gaza, and all would have been well. But I know you, my people in Israel, don't want to hear the truth, but the truth remains that we have lost. What are your thoughts on that?
It's in a way, if Israel has lost, then Saudi Arabia has lost, the Emirates have lost, and Egypt has lost for a number of reasons. The Israelis in particular have lost because they've been the tip of the spear of the violence against the Palestinians. The history of October 7th, and I'm saying the history of October 7th because there is before October 7th and then there is after October 7th, and there's a clear dividing line between the two. Before October 7th, the there was a march towards normalization of relations between the Gulf states and some other North African states like Morocco and the Israelis. And, you know, one of the reasons why this was taking place was, well, the number of reasons why this was taking place was, of course, they were trying to checkmate Iran, who they feared was a greater threat to them than the Israelis were. But probably more remotely, and something that would interest you in particular, is the Arab Spring put a mortal fear of the populations in the hearts of the ruling monarchies and regimes in the Arab world.
Where does the Arab Spring come into this? I want you to sort of connect it for us, because we have millions of listeners.
I was just about to do that.
Okay.
The Arab Spring toppled the regime in Tunisia. Mm-hmm. It toppled the regime in Egypt. It was instrumental, along with the British and the French, in toppling Gaddafi. It was, more importantly, one of the accelerants of the civil war in Syria. Right?
Yeah.
And so the Gulf monarchies were petrified of what is going on here. And if you go back to the literature of that time, you will see that the Emiratis and the Saudis were scouting around for security expertise, including mercenaries people like Blackwater, I forget the name, Eric Prince, was a guest of the Emirati regime, trying to teach their people how to suppress popular uprisings. And of course, the Israelis had developed the technology, particularly the surveillance technology, that was very prized by a lot of these regimes, because it gave them an insight into what was going on. Because if you remember, the revolution in Egypt was basically a Facebook and a Google revolution. They organized themselves using social media, just as our people did so at the Lekki Tollgate. It's a very difficult thing to manage if you've got social media through which people can organize. And so the Arab regimes were quite scared of an Arab Spring occurring with them. And so one of the few countries that could help them were the Israelis, who had this incredible surveillance technology that could be used to great effect. Now, one of the things that has come out of investigations into the assassination of the journalist Khashoggi in Turkey was that there had been surveillance on his WhatsApp, which was supposed to be encrypted and tamper-proof. And that surveillance came to the knowledge of Khashoggi, who was very, very concerned. But what it does show, if that is the case, is a rationale for the rapprochement between the Gulf states and the Israelis. So when the Abraham Accords began through Trump, there were a number of stars that were aligning, including these surveillance technology and defense support, which the Americans were going to give to the Saudis, so that there would be a defense pact, and the Saudi Arabia would be under the American defense umbrella. So does that kind of puts it together in context. So when Netanyahu says that he's not just doing this for Israel, but he's doing it to make a better Middle East, right? Hamas is not beloved of Egypt. Egypt wants Hamas gone, as much as the Israelis. And the Saudis find Hamas also an irritant, partly because they are supported by Iran. And of course, the Emiratis probably also don't particularly like Hamas. However, they do indulge them when they come to Dubai. You might remember there was an assassination by Mossad of one of the major Hamas leaders in Dubai about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's not as if Israel feels it's doing this alone for itself. It feels it's doing this to make to rid the world of Hamas. And the Americans have made no bones about getting rid of Hamas either. When Hamas won the election in Gaza, or sorry, let me say, when Hamas won the election in Gaza in 2006, the first thing that the rest of the Western world did was to put sanctions on Gaza and try to encourage the Palestinian Authority to take over. And there was the fight between the PA, Palestinian Authority in Gaza, and Hamas drove the Palestinian Authority out of Gaza.
Okay. Now, I'm going to interrupt you at that point because I know we've got a 5 o'clock news in about a minute or so.
Okay.
But
let me
let you round that up. So, is Israel losing? Has Israel lost?
Well, this is the point. Israel has lost on many levels, but everybody has lost on some level.
Aha. That's what some level that I'm going to be asking you to actually take us through when we come back after the news. Also, I'd like you to tell us, has the Abraham Accord worked? Is it likely to work without an independent Palestine? Is that okay when we come back?
Sure.
We've got 2 minutes news. Be right back. I told you, you're going to be... See how he's just taking us all the way back to the Arab Spring. Yes, you all didn't know that, did you? Be right back.